Welcome to Cannabis Business Minds Podcast with your host, Simone Samaluka-Radzins. Join me where I'll take you inside the ins and outs of this brand new and exciting business called cannabis. Connect with me on Calligia.com and follow us on social media as well. And here's today's show.
When you start boiling down the cannabis supply chain, right? When you really start thinking about it, you realize how interdependent everything is. If you are manufacturing a chocolate bar, a cannabis chocolate bar, an edible, you have many different suppliers. You've got your cultivators, or you've got your processors, right, to get the oil out. You've got your other raw material providers. So that's maybe some chocolate, maybe the best gluten-free flour you could ever enjoy. And then you've got your upstream, right? You've got to work with your retailers. You've got to work with your distributors and then your retailers, depending on the state, right? I made that sound very simple. The supply chain is complicated, right? We still have the packaging, we have freight, maybe we had to deal with some foreign transporters. Like, we have a lot of different people at play. So what happens when all of a sudden the supply chain is disrupted and not in a good way? What happened with COVID-19 for many cannabis operators is something that we still are not seeing the full effect. Right? It started in early November. I've talked to a few business owners that basically said they were getting hints of something going on in China in early November from their manufacturers, that there was COVID, but nobody really understood what that was, right? So their shipments started getting delayed and I'm talking shipments of packaging, right? Packaging and promo stuff. Their shipments started getting delayed in the beginning of early January, right? And so when you start thinking about that, that's one strain to the supply chain. The second strain is going to be local vendors or local producers, right? So right now I talked to a few people in California. The big issue right now is lab testing. So every cannabis is required to be lab tested prior to sale. So what's happening is that the labs are sending people home because it's non-essential, right? And so because to maintain the confinement and the quarantine rules, people aren't going to the labs. All right, so what happens? Well, produced product can't be tested. Therefore, it can't be sold. So that's another issue. Another issue is the local producer, so the chocolate manufacturer. Well, because you can't actually go to the manufacturing facility to actually produce chocolate, there's a shortage of inventory. That shortage of inventory makes it a lot harder for me, the producer of my edible chocolate bar, to actually make my edible chocolate bar. So what happens is I have to hold on to my inventory as long as I possibly can hold on to it. I have to decide right now, do I spend my cash on paying my employees, or do I spend my cash in producing more inventory because it's going to be likely that I probably won't be able to get that inventory for a while. All with trying to build my relations and make sure that my sales and my business development is streamlined and that my customers are still willing to buy. So as you can see, the business side of dealing with COVID in the cannabis industry is complex. The cherry on the top, which is, y'all, something I really want to focus on together, seriously, with a mastermind, is cannabis businesses and supporting businesses, ancillary providers, are not able to collect any relief from the federal government with a stimulus package. They can't, SBA loans, this relief package is not available for people and supporting people trafficking in a controlled substance. All right, so clearly, right now, this is the time to think smart and solution-oriented because the cannabis supply chain is getting disrupted. There are definitely massive silver linings in all of this, but this is when the brightest minds need to come together and figure it out. Hello, cannabis business minds, and hope you're doing well. On today's episode, we are going to be talking with a dear colleague of mine, Jonathan Teeters. He runs business development and general operations at the company Asuka. He's going to talk to us about the cannabis supply chain and the CBD supply chain and give us some nuggets about what it's like to lead a team remotely and in an area where there's massive crisis and some strategies that he's been using to stay productive, how his company has adapted to working amid COVID. So make sure that you take out some notes. This is an excellent episode where we get to dive deep into one leader's experience of navigating this. The medical crisis now, this pandemic, which is obviously an economic crisis, which from an employment standpoint, we're already seeing. And from a business standpoint, clearly we're seeing with layoffs and just like people just holding down their budgets. And so it's interesting when we think about sales and when we think about business development, because if every business is really kind of hunkered down and holding onto their budget, how do you even go approach that? Like, do you yourself just hold on and think about, you know, because one of the things that we're like, let's talk about is just like customer engagement. Like, what does that even mean when, you know, as a consultant, I get a ton of stuff from other consultants. Oh, this is how you can survive COVID. Take this course, all of this. And then I talk to somebody, she's like, I can't even handle all of these like new freebies that you can get. So what are your thoughts on just overall business development in this period?
Yeah. So I think one of the things that we know is a priority right now is that authenticity, it always mattered. Mm-hmm. But now when people's lives are on the line very much, yeah, authenticity is one of those things that rings truer than ever, right? Mm-hmm. And so for us, you know, that means trying not to be tone deaf, first of all, trying not to walk, you know, I had plans. I had a whole statewide tour of Colorado ready to go. I had like 100 different shops I was going to visit and drop off samples and really do a conventional sort of BD and sales tour of the state, you know. And the worst thing I could do then is walk in their door and say, hi, I'm here from Denver. Can we talk, you know, or whatever. So we've shifted a lot to video and telephone. Mm-hmm. I think like a lot of folks, we found that people are more open to this sort of communication now.
Yeah.
One of those things that we did if we were decentralized or if we, in a pinch, we would do this. Now it's becoming an everyday thing. And I think folks are recognizing that it has a lot of value connecting this way, and especially with video too, because so much of what we do is just, you know, talking heads and listening to voices. So being able to like see people's eyes, see their face, see their emotions, you know, see their house and kind of what it looks like, you know, during quarantine, I think helps. Secondly, is recognizing that for some of the companies that we work with, they're still deemed essential services. So these are cannabis dispensaries and whatnot, right? And to a certain degree, even CBD stores and natural health food stores, we got to stay open. And so they were our targets originally. We're still reaching out and engaging them, but instead of coming from the aspect of, can we sell you something to help us? Mm-hmm. We're really taking the perspective of how can we help you? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just checking in and seeing how things are going and putting a date on the calendar when we follow back up. Mm-hmm. In many cases, what we're doing also is recognizing that we have a supply of inventory that we were planning on both selling and also through various strategies, having like a speed to market strategy to get indoors and get on shelves. Mm-hmm. Well, now that we aren't really pushing that out as much, mm-hmm. we're offering, you know, free samples and supplies for the break room. You know, CBD is not the same as, THC. You know, toothpicks or anything else. So it actually has, you know, we have the benefit of being something that can help people stay calm, help them manage stress and emotions, help them manage the physical aspects of being on their feet 12 and 14 hours a day. And so that was a little twist for us. It went from, you know, can we sell you something to can we give you something just to help you through this, right?
Yeah.
So now we're finding folks who are saying, yeah, absolutely. I'll take, you know, take your CBD sugar sticks and put them in my lounge and, you know, for coffee for the employees.
Yeah.
And really recognizing that if we are at least present through the crisis, but mm-hmm. not pressuring through the crisis, mm-hmm. that when we come out on the other side, we're all going to take stock of who helped us, mm-hmm. who enjoyed the shit out of us, you know, and really how are we prepared to take the next step forward? And if we really expect or are going to try and, you know, push this this economic surge when things calm down, whenever that is, we have to have our house in order. And for us, that means while we may not be able to book all the sales now, we can build the relationships now through this engagement, through helping. And really, you know, we're going to lose money anyway if we don't sell. And so we might as well put some of the money into the relationships and hope that it comes back. And that's really one of those, that's where we are. It's not a hope and a pray thing so much as it is just hope that authenticity and we had a core value of helpfulness, right? Our products are meant to be ingredients. They're meant to help other people power their own CBD and cannabis edibles. And so from the very beginning at Azuka, like our core value was always be helpful. Right? Mm. And so that took a, you know, took a different spin when we were trying to sell products and push innovation and try to get into people's gummies and power, you know, Wana's edibles and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Now being helpful looks like listening.
Yeah.
And just kind of figuring out how we can try to make it a little less stressful for people. And, yeah. and you know, it's challenging and a lot of people don't want to talk to you, period. But when we do get them, a lot of people actually are looking for somebody to listen. And right now that's just a role we can play.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, when you think about sales, it's all about listening. And I would love for you, because you are the GM and head of biz dev, I think that a lot of entrepreneurs might confuse sales and business development. And could you break down what the difference is in your mind?
Sure. In my mind, sales is really driven by metrics and, you know, putting points on the board. And in this case, you know, the points are dollars.
Yeah.
Bringing on accounts, you know, trying to upsell and mm-hmm. increase, you know, the share of each, you know, customer that you bring in the door. Mm-hmm. For us, it was really looking at like how many store shelves are we on? Mm-hmm. How many products are they carrying? How many SKUs are they carrying? Mm-hmm. That's how you measure a win in many mm-hmm. regards. Now I think with respect to business development, as I was saying, there's much more of a bias towards the relationship yeah. and recognizing that business development is a lot about creativity and innovation at some point, because sales is A plus B mm-hmm. equals dollars for me and a benefit for you or some sort of value prop. Business development is much more about like, even what we're doing here, you know, yeah. How can we exchange value that may not have a monetary purpose right now, mm-hmm. but that allows the relationship to move forward and opens the door for other opportunities that you may not see right now. And for me, that's really the key right now is, even just through listening to these folks and calling and saying, how's it going?
Yeah.
What are you seeing in terms of sales? How are your customers responding? How's your supply chain going? You're learning opportunities to help, and that will lead to future business. So it's not just about, my products right now, but it is about, hey, people's buying habits are changing yeah. and maybe there will be an opportunity in the future for a product that we hadn't thought about
yeah.
or something we were working on that we've kept under wraps, but we should push forward during this time as we can so that it's ready to turn into sales on the other end. And that doesn't really happen if you don't work on developing the relationship behind the business.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about just like even getting into finding that relationship takes a while, and then building the trust, building that bond that could take, depending on what you're selling and what kind of service you have, it could take years to actually translate into a sale. And I think right now, especially in this space, but all around, it's all about relationships and how can we kind of help. And my thought about this entire crisis has really been, you know, what new I think a lot of businesses are going to have to pivot, unfortunately, if they hadn't been, you know, monitoring cash, if they were kind of operating on a month-to-month basis, you know, a sale equals I can, you know, pay everything for that month. And so I, you know, for those guys, it's been hard because I've been trying to figure out like, what is the solution, right? Because I always am like, oh, we'll just focus on cash flow. But if you're running out of cash flow, then you have to really, I would say, just focus on relationships. It yeah. seems, you know, that will propel you into, that really could propel you into a lot when this whole thing kind of ends, or as we're kind of seeing light to the end. Because, yeah, I mean, I was so happy to see that, and it makes sense that cannabis and CBD are these essential services during this yeah. crisis. Like, I'm like, thank God. Like, I think what makes me very angry is that a cannabis business still can't get an SBA loan or FEMA relief. And like, that is like a whole nother discussion, but I think something important to have. But during this time, it seems like anxiety is up the roof. It seems like stress is up the roof, and CBD and THC are these very, you know, lovely compounds that can help people. And so it just seems that, yeah, developing those relationships makes sense. From the conversations that you've been having, you know, what is the one thing that you've noticed?
I think what I've noticed is that other people are taking care of themselves first, which is, mm-hmm. you know, even to the point of talking to a lot of these business owners who are not prioritizing their own sales at the moment, but they're recognizing that they have staff to take care of, and they have customers who, you know, have to work within, you know, crazy hours, changes to accessibility. And if we kind of, you know, reflect back on medical cannabis and the fact that a lot of people still count on cannabis and CBD as part of a medical regime. Now more than ever, they need access because and support to access their medicine because the traditional healthcare systems are, you know, burdened at best.
Yeah.
You know, and every time we turn on the news, people are talking about how it's going to, you know, things are, you know, potentially going to collapse if we go the same route that we're going. So I would say that people are really, they know this will be over at some point, but mostly they're really just operating, most of them are operating day by day in terms of, can I be open at all?
Yeah.
If I can, what am I selling? Will my customers show up? Do they think that when they walk in my store, they're going to you know, be touching products that are like, how can I protect my customers and how can I protect my employees? I think is really one of the key things that I'm seeing.
Yeah.
And that manifests in a lot of different ways, but that's the sort of the heart of a lot of people that they're, what they're dealing with right now.
Yeah. And you also mentioned, I mean, you've got a team that's not where you are, that's kind of hit in the center. As a GM, you know, what kind of things are you doing to kind of just lead your team and try to continue to build some optimism in a time when there is no clear, you know, I mean, leadership is helping people go in a certain direction, even though you don't know where the end of that is going. And I think this is where true leadership really comes. It's like, how are you helping people and on your team and kind of any insight you can give people listening?
So I think there's lots of ways to approach leadership during these times. Mm-hmm. One is, and we've been, you know, we've gone through different phases. There was a period at the very beginning where it was, you know, stiff upper lip, just keep going and keep pretending like nothing's happening until things shut down. And then we are forced to act differently. And we're kind of at that space now where we're forced to act differently. Mm-hmm. For a while it was, yes, this is happening. It might get bad, but right now we have goals. We have a strategic plan to execute. We're trying to raise capital, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So just focus on what will, you know, we read, as a team, a couple months ago, we all read Great by Choice by Jim Collins.
Oh, I love Jim Collins. I've never read Great by Choice.
So I would recommend it because one of the key principles in Great by Choice, well, several, but one of the key ones is a return on luck, right? Mm-hmm. And you have good luck and bad luck. Mm-hmm. But the companies that really thrive in uncertain times are the ones who are poised to figure out how to take advantage of things they don't expect or don't see coming. And make the most of them. So we really tried to think about, like, this is a really bad time, but what are the sort of return on luck things that we could get here? Mm-hmm. So luck for us meant that, you know, we struck this partnership with Wana right before this whole thing really blew up. Mm-hmm. And now as a result, while we are seeing really hard times with respect to selling CBD products directly into retail stores, we have had the luck advantage of being in a place where we could double down on that relationship with Wana. And now dispensaries are, you know, critical services.
Yeah.
People are buying cannabis like it's, you know,
like it's 420 every day.
Yeah. Like it's 420 every day. And what that means for us is that we are able to shift some of our effort and emphasis into supplying that piece of our business model.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't know that it would necessarily go that way, but now as luck would have it, we were in place and now that relationship is taking off and skyrocketing. And so that was good for us. The other thing that he talks about a lot in this is that there's the turtle in the hare, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, and many businesses are in the hare mode right now where they're just trying to figure out, like, how quickly can I get to the next little thing where I can take a breath and go, okay, I'm safe, right?
Yeah.
In the race, maybe I didn't, maybe I won the leg. For us, we take an approach called the 20-mile march. And a 20-mile march is, you know, very much like the military. They can do, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles, but they don't do it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
They just break it down into reliably going 20 and stopping, going 20 and stopping and refueling and going 20 and stopping. And so for us, we're looking at, you know, what are the things during this time of crisis that we can focus on as our everyday rhythms?
Yeah.
That we know are baked into our success model, right?
Yeah.
So that means really, like, keeping your meetings consistent. And instead of saying, well, I guess we're not going to reach out to our customers or we can't sell, so why be on the phone?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're just shifting the reason why we're on the phone. So we still keep the same sort of march going of making the number of calls every day, logging them, getting them into our CRM, you know, managing that through our drip email campaigns and things where we change the content of the emails, but we're not changing the structure of what we think leads to success. And if we continue to do that and don't change that a whole lot, then or as little as we can through the process, then on the end, we will still be taking those consistent 20-mile marches, and we'll be making progress while other people are trying to pick up all the pieces and figure out how do they move forward. Yeah. So a lot of it's about maintaining some momentum, but not being so concerned about being the first one to get to the destination right now.
Yeah. And not knocking down the entire structure that you've built that you know works, but kind of, you know, almost comparing it hardware and software, making a quick update to your software internally to adjust for what's happening.
Yeah. And I think another thing that should be mentioned too is while, you know, I mentioned the stiff upper lip concept early on, and that is one where you almost try not to recognize the hardships and you just plow through them head down. Yeah. I think now as a team and as a leadership team, we're taking more of an approach of like head up. You know, as I said, we've got 6 or 7 staff in New York City proper and recognizing that they're going through things.
Yeah.
They're going through things that are going to affect the way that they show up on meetings and calls. You know, 2 weeks into this, how they're going to feel about life, about the future of the economy. And it's going to hit all of us. But we need to recognize that we have to provide space for people to actually process as a team. You know, because we've always said that we are a family here. Yeah. We're a small family. We're very flexible. We're really good at pivoting and making changes because we work together so well. But to do that, we have to also recognize that like people are stressed out. They have anxiety. We need to talk about like, what does that mean? Do you need to sleep in one day? Are you feeling more tired? Okay, we can adjust some things later in the day so you can get a few extra hours of sleep because you can't go to sleep at night because you're so wired and stressed out or whatever it might be. But allowing people to have those feelings, I think, especially as a leader, gives them the space to get it out so that it's no longer the thing standing between them and the other things they need to get done.
Yeah.
And that's really important in these times.
Yeah. Well, I think if we don't acknowledge this big elephant in the room, that is COVID-19, we're not able to kind of work with it. And it's just going to kind of just inhibit everything. And then I've been even thinking, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And like that second thing on the pyramid is safety and security. And so I think just because everything has fundamentally changed to get to the highest point of that pyramid, it's like self-realization. Many people just went from, you know, that fifth level to the second level and overnight. And so I think that, you know, I think it's a brilliant point to give the time and the space to people and see really what they need.
Yeah, we were largely, a remote workforce. You know, I'm in Colorado and I have folks in, mostly in New York City, other than here in Colorado. But as such, we had different time zones. We have one person on our team in Hong Kong and another one in California. So we had to be very flexible in how we got things done and communicated. So we were highly technologically driven with tools like Zoom and Asana and other project management tools. And that really allows people to take that flexibility, but not lose sight of the goals and the objectives, what they got to do and still get their work done. And I do think that people are realizing that there is a certain need for safety and taking care of your family and your house. You know, we've had to make changes. For example, we had an office place where we did all of our fulfillment, order fulfillment out of, and one of our staff members would go there every day and process orders and get them out. And because that whole office building essentially is under quarantine and shutting down by the state and the county here, we had to go and essentially recreate a fulfillment center in my house right now.
Oh, and so, wow.
And so we had to bring product in. We had to bring our fulfillment tools and create a safe, clean space that was only for doing this so that we could still fulfill orders that were coming out and get samples out to people and kind of keep that 20-mile march rhythm, as I was saying. You know, because it doesn't mean you just say, well, guess we can't fulfill
orders.
To tell people it might be a week. We had to try to keep our integrity through this process. And that meant that, you know, we had to make those pivots. And that means that I have a fulfillment center in my basement right now. Those are the things that we needed to do also to allow people to continue to feel like they had a reason to get up, get to work, contribute, and know that they were going to be part of the success on the other side of this.
Yeah. How have you seen changes to the supply chain? So I guess breaking that down from, you know, current supply chain in the US, but also any foreign foreign suppliers, probably from a packaging perspective. And one additional detail to that is, like, when did you start noticing any indicators? I spoke with a colleague yesterday and she mentioned November. She was hearing indicators from some of her vendors in China about COVID, even though it seemed like from the news and everything, we didn't know anything until December, but really I feel like it didn't catch mainstream until, you know, January.
Yeah. Well, as it would happen, one of the people on our team, marketing advisor and whatnot, she lives in Hong Kong. She's in Hong Kong half the time and in Colorado half the time. So just as this was getting going, she was kind of doing the back and forth and started to recognize, like, hey, this thing's happening. They're starting to be a little strict. And the suppliers that I'm talking with in China are saying that it's going to be a delay to get something from a factory onto a dock. And then from a dock onto a plane or a ship, because they're having more requirements around, checking where did it come from? Is it, sterilized? Is it clean? Mm-hmm. And at this point, they didn't really know what they were looking for, but things were just slowing down. Yeah. So we did have some implications immediately. We were ordering things like, POP retail displays for counters and things to display all our products, and had those designed and had a printer and a manufacturer in China. Saved us a whole bunch of money, and for that point, we were like, okay, cool, we can do this. And then as soon as they were done, it turned into they're done and they're ready to go. And then they're sitting on the dock for a week then 2 weeks. And then we think they'll get on the plane next week. Mm-hmm. And they got on the plane and then they had to sit in quarantine over here because we were just starting to deal with this thing and saying, oh, anything coming from China, we have to be really careful of. And so that was the first real sign of like, oh, this is really slowing us down because, our whole retail plan was built on, I need these resources now.
Yeah.
And there's a timeline, there's fulfillment deadlines, put it on a plane, I'm paying extra for this. And all of a sudden, none of that mattered. It just, when it showed up, it would show up. So that really caused some initial challenges. But I would say, secondarily, things like glass bottles and labels and some of those things that our suppliers in the US get from China. I think we have to remember that too. Like, just because I order something from a supplier here in the US doesn't mean that they're not getting it from China.
Exactly.
The domino effect started to show up pretty quickly, whereby domestic stocks were starting to dry up, or we had to start calling 5 or 6 different suppliers to try to find enough of something that we needed because each of their stocks were drying up and they didn't know when they would be able to resupply from China. And so we had to cobble together what we needed for, an order for packaging. In this case, some of our suppliers are local. We try to do that as much as possible. They're here in the Denver area and things, but again, they order their paper from China.
Yeah.
And then they turn the paper into packaging for us. So you really had to really quickly understand the dominoes and how they were connected. Let's just check my little board here. Other things that we used in production. So our production right now, we're having a little challenge getting chocolate because our chocolate supplier is here local, but now they're under the same quarantine that we are. And so their deliveries aren't happening on schedule necessarily. Mm-hmm. We can't just roll up to their factory and pick it up.
Just pick it up. And,
bring it back to our kitchen. And then other things that we didn't really expect would be issues are now just giant red flags in that we're having trouble getting gloves, rubber gloves for the production team to use in the kitchen. Alcohol wipes to clean down surfaces and things like that, as part of our normal process of maintaining a clean workspace and things like that. So automatically we're kind of rationing our own supplies and trying to make sure that we're not wasting them and they're really only going to focused use in the kitchen and production and things. So that was another implication where typically we would keep lower stocks and just pop on Amazon and order more gloves or order more wipes. And all of a sudden we can't do that. And so that's a reality too. We have to be aware of.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting because it's multifaceted because you have your own inventory strategy, how much you need for safety stock when you know the lead time and order time for all of your inputs. But now if other vendors are also susceptible, other vendors aren't even producing, it probably just is a whole different game changer. And then also if the chocolate vendor can actually produce in their home, right? Because if people, so I guess that really just goes to, again, if you try to think of the solution. It's all relationships, understanding what's up with that one vendor. And also trying to figure out how much inventory you should be having right now, because also cash is so important. So you don't want to suck up all your cash in the inventory.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's a huge, huge issue for us. You know, as I said, we were kind of in the middle of a robust capital raise.
Yeah.
And while the cannabis markets and whatnot were already challenged,
yeah,
COVID-19 really kind of just shot a hole in the floor and everything went through it. And so we had, you know, our CEO is working, you know, nonstop trying to figure out how to creatively structure deals now. Really think about capital markets in terms of, like, it's not just sitting there waiting to go to the best idea or the most ready business. People are actually looking out many months ahead to try and figure out, how are you going to come out of this? It's not about right now. So capital is a huge concern for us. And with respect to, you know, production, we had a good supply of production ready to support this really robust retail launch strategy.
Yeah.
And so now, while, you know, orders are somewhat down online because people are spending their money and their time buying other things, we are using that inventory to push out to, again, maintain these relationships, to try and give people, you know, an example of what they would get under normal circumstances. So not totally changing the model. But then, you know, staff is really a key concern. So, you know, with cash that's left, you have to really look at, how do I take care of my people through this whole process first, and make sure that none of us are really left out high and dry in a month or in 2 months. And while, you know, anything can happen, you know, our management team is really committed to putting the people first. Because I said, we're, you know, we're a small family. We work really closely together.
Yeah.
And that really means that we have to keep in mind, like, first of all, we got to keep our family whole, just like everybody else is worrying about. Then you start to think about, now, what are the other things that we need to do to show signs of health and life? And for us, you know, production is happening with the things that we can control. But, you know, we're limited now in terms of our access to our kitchen, because we shared some space. We have, you know, our chief creative officer and our head of production in New York City stuck in their homes and literally not able to leave. So a lot of the research and development that was underway and the product development that we were working on for new products that were either going to be, you know, tweaked or launched into the market here to support this retail strategy are totally put on hold, because they can't even get access to a mixer or the supplies that are normally in the kitchen that they we go to work on. Yeah. So I think, and we, for example, we were going to run a whole new line of sugar sticks, right? It's one of our key products, and that requires a co-packer and everything. We had everything ready, but then realized we can't go to the co-packer because they have like 300 employees at their co-packing facility. And guess what? Those people are staying home. They're working on, you know, very slim numbers of employees. And it's not the time for us to try to sink a bunch of money. Well, it's not a ton of money, but in this time, when you're talking about $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 for, you know, some new boxes and some new film and the labor to fill these sugar sticks, that's a lot, because, you know, that's salary for our employees. That's keeping our people together through these times of uncertainty. And guess what? Sugar sticks can wait, because they're probably not going to be flying off the shelves just as much as they were beforehand either. So a lot of that is really slowing down. We're really just kind of taking stock of what we've got and how far that can get us in terms of sales as they occur, but mostly how many relationships can we support through this? Because even if, you know, the thing about inventory, you know, is it's like, it costs you money to sit on the shelf anyway. So we might as well try and figure out how to reduce the burden on that line item. And that's where we're kind of being able to be creative about you know, booking things as revenue and then writing it down as a gift and other things, so that our budgets and you know, our balance sheets and things don't look like we're not making any revenue and we're just losing money on inventory.
Yeah. I think everyone has a reason why Q1 has just kind of gone to shit, right? Like, I think that there's definitely a reason for most businesses, except you're like Lysol or something, like the Procter & Gamble's. This has been invaluable insight. I'm curious, so we talked about supply chain, we've talked about cash, we've talked about team. You know, any other insight that you have on COVID that you want to share before? Because I do want to just get into what have you been up to before we kind of wrap it up?
I think this is a couple of things. To the degree we can do it, this is a great time to do that sort of internal development work of taking some online courses. Yeah, exactly. to the degree that we can. Because so often we're running so fast that anything extra as a startup is like, whoop, we got blinders on and I'm focused on the goal. And, you know, I wanted to take some supply chain management courses and I'm taking a web development course, just some of those things that didn't have room before this. But I think also as a brand and as a company now, to that effort of building trust and authenticity, it's a great time to really focus on building content. Right? Because we're all at home. We're all at some point getting a little cabin fever and wanting to connect, wanting to get creative, wanting to play around with things. And so we're trying to really focus on how do we bring people together to create content, which is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And we've hosted some live Instagram sessions and Facebook sessions to talk about not only what's going on, but how to stay healthy, how to keep your mental health, how the endocannabinoid system and cannabis can work to address your matters of anxiety and things. Well, we can't legally say that. We can talk about it in general and background. And most people get it. And then I think also like challenging our chief creative officer, who's a chef, and our founder, Ron Silver. He's at home stuck with kids. And so we're now figuring out how do we create video content around using our products in recipes that you can make at home.
Right? Oh, wow. See, the creativity just comes if you allow it to come.
Yeah. And that's really, we had a call where we talked about COVID and like what are ways we can stay present and engaged. And one of them was that everybody's on social media talking about like, what can you do with your kids? Mm-hmm. What can I make at home? Like they're playing around with recipes. And so, we are fundamentally an ingredient company and helpfulness is our nature. Our website, we have dozens of recipes on there, right? Well, now's the time to take it from being a recipe with a picture into now creating those second and third layers of content around that we didn't have the time for really. We were like, recipes on the website is good. Pictures is good. But now we're talking about, how does Ron take one of those off, make a video about it, show people how to do it, and then create that content and put it out there. Also, we're engaging our community to say, hey, how are you using these products to make things at home? Like, take pictures of your recipes that you're making at home, your chocolate chip cookies with Azuka sugar and chocolate, and then we'll share them back out with our universe because that allows people to feel connected.
Yeah.
And creates that sense of community. Community, I think, is really important right now. And so figuring out ways to make that connection and leverage that so other people see that they're not alone, even though we're all trapped in our homes, is really helpful right now. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just to go back to the content creation, I think content creation is one thing and repurposing that content, right? So don't spend the entire time creating it. Think about other distribution. I think about how many people are on their screens right now, just looking at social media and wanting something fresh, not wanting something so depressing, right? But how you can take that one blog post about, this new recipe, chocolate chip cookie recipe with Asuka, and add that to another spin of, you can also make cookies with your kids and use that on a different kind of Facebook group or something like that. It's just, there's such an opportunity in my mind to sit back if you can just, I think you have to allow yourself though to be creative, and to be creative, you can't be stressed. So you have to make sure that you're in a good mindset, or that creative person on the team is in a good mindset, but really start thinking about and dialing in like, you know your customers. And if you don't know, this is the perfect time to really get to know them, because people want to talk. People are very, I've been trying to figure out like, what's the silver lining to all of this? Good things for the environment. I think people are going introspective. There's different ways of community, but I think you're right. Like focusing on these things that you didn't have time to, or you've neglected, kind of the urgent versus the important, even though we might not have thought any of these were, they've always have been important, but they've never been urgent, how we can use that time to do it.
Yeah, it's a great time for a little four quadrant matrix as they ask business and really trying to develop some new lenses and some new muscles around how do you prioritize and then really oftentimes in business and in startups, there's the concept of do it yourself if you want to get there fast and get it done, because we've all got so much to do. And then engaging other people takes more work. It's tiring, it's challenging, it's frustrating. Mm-hmm. Now we have no other opportunity really than to figure out how to make what we need to have happen something that anybody else can like take up and do themselves or contribute to. Yeah. And I think I think one of the key takeaways is, as you said, it kind of strips back Maslow's hierarchy. But while I think prior to COVID, there was so much focus on technology driving individualism, I really think that one of the things that's going to come out of this is that we are going to see technology for what it is, and perhaps in a new light around how it's really, you know, like Zuckerberg wanted it to be, intended to really keep the connections and bring us together, right? We saw this just this huge push in society of individualism, and technology gives me my own little bubble and everything I want is right in front of me, because you could be so customized and almost myopic to things outside of you. And we don't have that choice now. And I think because we can't even physically touch and go see people when we want to, we have to now recognize that technology is about making connections, you know, more than anything, keeping us connected. So I think I'm excited about that.
Have you done a happy hour with your friends on Zoom yet?
Yeah, I did last Sunday, because I was getting frustrated and it was starting to hit me emotionally of like, geez, this is real, and just everything. And, you know, my own anxiety and whatnot is a thing. And I said, you know what, like, other people are doing this stuff. Like, none of my friends have stood up to do it. So I'm just going to do it. I scheduled a dinner and I made dinner and then sat down and, you know, drank some whiskey. And I had like six people on, including my parents and some friends in Washington and a cousin in Florida and some other industry friends. And so now it's just a standing Sunday dinner Zoom now. Yeah. Because that's how we're going to do it. And I think a lot of people were kind of glad to see that it was a possibility. And I now know other people who are doing it in their networks. And I think, you know, it's not what we would have really thought about as like necessarily authentic connection, but it's what we have. Yeah. And it's better than nothing at this point.
Oh, I think it's way better than nothing. And I also think it's very fascinating how I've reached out to people I haven't been talking to for a while, and how then now there's these standing meetings. And, you know, I just think when we go back to, I guess, that original theme we talked about building relationships, how this could just be, again, silver lining of building relationships.
One of the things that caught us the quickest when we realized we were going to have to pivot was we were getting really, like, we were just about ready to like hop on planes and go out to supply side out in Anaheim.
That's such a good show
and everything, one of the biggest out there. And you know, we were gonna just really work it and had all these meetings lined up and everything, and then they canceled it like 2 days before it started, and people were in Anaheim ready to go, booths were getting set up. And from that time on, everybody that was part of that food universe that we kind of operate in outside of cannabis, we have food and we're in the food universe, everybody immediately said, you know what, like, we got to figure out how to maintain this because it's important to us. Mm-hmm. The connections we're going to make are important to us. So let's figure this out. And I think there was, while you might've been hard pressed to set up a virtual meeting with somebody before, like, I don't have time for that. I don't want to figure out the software.
Download it on my phone.
Now it's like, this is it. And we can still talk face to face. We can share our brands. We can make the connection. And immediately there was a really big push to do that. And it's playing into our favor, because that's really what we're looking to do is, you know, connect this way and at least support you through the education and just like figuring out how we can be here for you before it becomes a hard sales push. Sales can come here. Right now, it's about relationships and trust and authenticity.
Excellent. And can you just tell us about Azuka? And like, you've been there, you've been working as GM and head of business development since 2018, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And for all of us who don't know about what your company does, what do you guys do?
Okay. So Azuka, it's, we are an ingredient company, essentially, is kind of the position we take. We have our own line of products, you know, from simple syrups to sugar sticks and chocolate coins. But what really makes us unique in the industry is that our founder, Ron Silver, who is a chef in New York City, he came up with some now patent pending, almost about to be awarded ways of what we call thermodynamic encapsulation of cannabis. So we're able to break down cannabinoids to single molecules, protect them through this process, mm-hmm. and then put them into foods and beverages in a way that they don't retain that the weedy, hempy flavor. And they're fast acting. So we now have, you know, within edible products that are effective within 2 to 15 minutes.
Wow.
And so we, instead of just like kind of pushing that out into every product and every tincture and everything else that we could do, we really focused on creating a line of highly cultivated, culinary backed ingredients and products ourselves, mm-hmm. that can form the backbone for other people to use them in their products. So it's not a package, but you know, we have sugar, you know, mm-hmm. sugar is in almost everything, right? Whether you're making a gummy or you're making a beverage. So we really are focusing on how can we power other people's products. And it's kind of that idea that if you're not so worried about like controlling your own brand and putting it out there and fighting to be the biggest gummy, mm-hmm. or the best beverage, mm-hmm. and you know, in a crowded market, you have to spend a lot of money and do a lot to try to get attention and fight for shelf space.
Yeah.
We can just quietly just be the power behind everybody's products. And so that's where Wana really picked us up.
Mm-hmm.
For us, this is, it's pretty incredible because they tried 17 different companies and products.
Oh, wow.
And as you were talking about business development, it took a year for us to work through building the efficacy and the trust so that a company could choose to launch a brand new product line with us in it. So really our philosophy is about being helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you are a chef baking brownies or cookies for your catering company.
Yeah.
Or you're a big beverage company looking to figure out like, how do I make a fast acting beverage that's really precise and that people understand and doesn't taste like shit. You know, that's where we are. And so we have our own line of branded products. Mm-hmm. And then we have what we call our Azuka Inside strategy, which is where we partner with gummy companies,
mm-hmm.
beverage companies, other food product companies, and those who are trying to get into the space,
mm-hmm.
who don't have the bandwidth or the expertise to figure it out for themselves. You know, instead of trying to play with putting oil and things into your products and you know, a long innovation curve on trying to optimize that, we've allowed people to kind of skip a few steps and get to something that they can use right away and stay focused on what their core brand and their core products are about without having to also be experts in cannabis and cannabinoid science.
Oh, that's so great, because you're allowing so many people from food to kind of jump in.
Yes.
Into this space, which allows more products and just a lot more into the space.
It's, if you take, you know, a couple pennies,
mm-hmm.
out of a million units, you're going to make a lot more money than if you try to take a dollar out of 1,000 units. You know, it's that idea that we want to be the ubiquitous cannabis ingredient company.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others in this space trying to do that as well. But as we found, and you know, Wana really kind of proved for us, we already knew it, but they proved for us that like, there's a lot of people trying to like get into this space and be water soluble, fast acting, tasting great. We think that we, you know, have head and shoulders above some of these other companies. And that's why our focus is really trying to build that trust and relationships right now.
Yeah.
Because we were waiting on the FDA, like many people were, to provide clarity. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe one benefit to this is that the calendar's still ticking, right?
Yeah.
And so instead of waiting another 3 or 4 or 5 months where we just are, you know, it seems like it's a clear path, but it's not. At least now we can use this time to build relationships. And a lot of these companies they're incubating right now. They're incubating their ideas. They're using this time to innovate and figure out what to do so that when this all settles out, they can be first to market with the next drink, the next, yeah. you know, fast acting edible in a certain category. And it's proving very, very lucrative for us, you know, within, you know, reasonable terms, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything I think in this space takes a little extra work and definitely a little extra time.
I should say too, I would be remiss if I didn't say, you can go to azuka.co. Our full website is up. We're still shipping to you know, individuals at home.
Cool.
We have a whole wholesale line as well. So if you're you know, a retailer or one of these companies that's looking to play around with a pound of sugar to just see how you can use it in your confections, now's the time to get on that. We've got some sweet deals, and you know, we again want to help put these products in your hands so you can make the most of it during this time.
Excellent. And then are you working with people in Europe or are you just US based right now, or US and Canada, I guess, North America?
We have some discussions with, you know, Canadians,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're all hungry to figure this out, given the nature of their market and that edibles are now legal in Canada. We do have a relationship with a sugar distributor in the UK. Mm-hmm. And we're also talking with several of the large hemp and CBD extractors who are now applying for their novel food licenses in the UK, especially, so that when they get those licenses, we can be one of the brands that they work with. And then other than that, we mostly just ship to the US because
why not?
Imports and exports are challenging. But we're definitely open to brands and companies in Europe who may be a little bit behind where like the US market is in developing really branded products, but they're on the same path too. And this market's not going away. We know that. So we definitely welcome, you know, inbound from Europe and other countries in South America where the markets are really starting to take off.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Jonathan, for joining Cannabis Business Minds. And make sure that you check him out and get on cannabisbusinessminds.com and create your profile so they can check you out there. And I'd love to get you back on the show in a few, you know, in a month or two to figure out how things are going. And I really appreciate you giving the insight. We talked about a lot of nuggets that I think every business owner, entrepreneur, or kind of leader needs to be thinking about that if they're doing this in their business. And I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you from France for having me. And
you're welcome.
On your recent life changes, and I hope to see you back in the States sometime soon.
If I can come back.
Thank you for listening to today's show. This is your host, Simone Simaluka-Radzins of Calogia.com. I hope that you find this episode entertaining and insightful. My goal is to educate all of you about this exciting business because knowledge is power. If you haven't already, head on over to Calogia.com to connect with me and to meet other business leaders in the professional cannabis community. Also, if you like this, please go into iTunes and leave the Cannabis Business Minds podcast a 5-star.